a fighting fury, we're from Tigerland. In any weather you will see us with a grin, risking head and skin. If we're behind, then never mind, we'll fight and fight and win, for we're from Tigerland. We never weaken till the final siren's gone.
Good evening, Tiger fans and Draft fans. Oh, you're bobbing along there, Dill. There you go. So that's a catchy tune.
It's not bad.
The draft started dusted, but we thought we'd do one more little recap just to go over, I suppose, any of the surprises, any of the plays that have slipped. And I more importantly wanted to get Dill's analysis on the Richmond Draft Hall, because he is the man who's across the draft like no other. He is unbelievably into the draft. And I firstly want to point out, I felt like you were vindicated with your Dyson Sharp one, firstly, as we welcome you. I thought it was a really good pick by you to have him where you had him. But how have you felt after the draft, mate? It's a big, big couple of months, and now it's all done and dusted.
Yeah, this draft definitely felt more, there was a lot more curveballs overall. There were some that I could honestly say that I expected that slid and rose up the draft board. But at the same time, there are some that are still fit. They feel a little bit inexplicable to me, but we'll discuss all of that, of course, with the sliders and the risers and stuff like that. I think first it's important to acknowledge Richmond's draft, as we're on a Richmond show here, and I think they've done really well, but we'll unpack it as the night goes on.
Out of interest, how many did you get right on your mock draft? It was bloody difficult. I think I got about four or five, and that was probably in the top end of the picks.
You know what? I never actually did this year an official mock draft of my own where I actually went down pick by pick and absolutely did it. So we did a lot of mock drafts with Jesse on the True Footy channel on Footy from the Flat, but that was all kind of like one selection for one selection. So we never got full autonomy of picking the players. As far as where I did have a bit of a list down on the night that I was kind of following off that I sort of expected. It's hard though. You get clouded obviously by the news that you hear. You have Cal Toomey's news come in. You've got Fox. I think The Age actually broke some of those big ones at the top end, like the Harry Dean one. There was the Nan one to Melbourne, and you don't know how much to actually buy into those. So it's difficult to, when there's a big news item that comes in, it's difficult to kind of burst off that and go your own way as well. So didn't do an official one, but I think it was, you know, by the end of it, a lot of those guys at the top, pretty much actually Richmond was where it probably started to get a little bit different to what most people had.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I think as supporters, we all get easily sort of sucked into the vibe and the hype around the draft and different mocks that are coming out from the experts. But the Nan one was interesting, because that was a big story, wasn't it, about him getting invited to the draft night one, and then it got to the Demons pick and it sort of didn't happen. Everyone's like, oh, okay, what happened there?
What's going on?
Yeah. But I suppose the thing you don't know is did the Ds have to pivot because of something else that happened prior? Well, they probably didn't have to, but, or do they invite players as smoke screens now? Like, are clubs getting that tactical to try and throw people off the scent?
I do think that was a big thing. I think from Richmond, and Toomey spoke about that as well in some of the Gettable episodes, how much Richmond were not keen to disclose who they wanted to pick. And I think, you know, with live trading and particularly at this draft, I think this was a big one. At least you were open to be able to. We didn't see a ton in the end. But I think clubs, particularly in that Richmond-Melbourne range and then up through the teens, a lot of those clubs obviously did want to move. And they were open to if they were going to get something of value back. And I think Melbourne are probably in that space a little bit, but then obviously ended up going with the small forward in the end. But yeah, it was a fascinating draft overall. I think it was really, really good, particularly if you're just a neutral observer checking out the whole thing.
Even the second night, the second night was as interesting as the first night because of the names that were left over from night one. And look, obviously the clubs know better than all of us. There's a reason why I guess some of these guys slipped, but when you enter night two and you've got like Filippo, Hibbins, Hargraves, Ollie Greaves, Rodriguez, like there was a heap of names on there that we all thought were probably going to go, if not in the first round, early in that second round. Was there one that was the biggest shock for you that didn't get taken in those first handful of picks in the second round?
I mean, not that didn't get to, I mean, Hibbins, Hargraves has to be the biggest shocker for me over the whole night. It's really hard to justify how he didn't get picked at all and then also missed the rookie draft as well. So he has to be, across the entire draft, he has to be the biggest shock. Yeah. I was a little bit surprised. I think when we unpack the Hibbins Hargraves one and maybe the Greaves one that were bigger sort of shocks, I think you can go through and sort of understand it. Jevon Phillipu is a really interesting one because I think the arguments that you'd use for why Noah Hibbins Hargraves and Greaves didn't get drafted or went very, very late, Jevon Phillipu doesn't have those same concerns. If you're trying to look for things, you know, patterns and similarities of players and stuff like that. So he was still a bit of an interesting one for me. I would have expected him on pure talent and athleticism to have gone inside the top 20. So then you start having those conversations around character, which become difficult because you don't know, you know, you haven't been in the industry and those sorts of things. So it's difficult. Those three kind of stand out to me. I'm trying to think of any others off the top of my head. I mean, I was a big Rory Wright fan over the draft and he went undrafted in the end. So that was an interesting one. A guy that you guys have just put on your train on there, Thomas Burton, he was another one that I really, really liked and expected him to go, you know, late, probably fourth round, but they're probably some of the bigger ones for me.
Yeah, Burton was one I thought might have gone as well, so I'm kind of glad that we've got him on our train on list. Fred Rodriguez was probably the other one for me that I thought was going to go early, and obviously he ended up getting the spot at West Coast anyway through the rookie draft. Riley Onley was probably another one that people are asking about. What your thoughts are on Riley Onley? I thought for a big guy, he's got some good speed. I thought he had some really appealing athletic traits for a big man.
I've said it all season. He's got some technical stuff, like with his ball handling and his decision making, and some of his skill work that does leave a little bit to be desired. But I do think if you look at his body of work over the season, he has improved a lot of that stuff. And then you juxtapose that against how explosive and quick he is off the mark. He can really get that breakaway from stoppage. As much as he is still a bit of a project, I'm surprised that he didn't go at least in the first couple of rounds of the draft. But he gets onto a list, so he's still got the opportunity to be able to do that. But yeah, I agree with you. He was a big one.
Well, we'll take a look at some of we'll go through the draft in order, not the whole draft, just maybe the first round or so. But Dersma went number one, like everyone expected, and then Ureland at number two. The Harry Dean bid did, in fact, come through at three. Were you surprised by the Dean bid coming through? I know there was a little bit of talk about it. They're always the hardest things to place, I reckon, are the bids. But were you shocked that it came through that early?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, by the draft, I wasn't shocked in the sense that everybody was reporting it and multiple reputable news sources were reporting it. So I wasn't shocked in that sense, but I was that it came at three. I didn't have him that high on my draft board. So it's difficult there. And then when you throw in the fact that West Coast had those bids on, you know, Jai Murray and Dylan Patterson in the 20s, you'd think, why didn't they just bid on Dylan Patterson at the top end? They really had nothing to gain from that Harry Dean bid, other than the fact that maybe Carlton passed on him and they'd actually get them themselves. If they outright wanted him, I think that would have been strange too, that they would have got Harry Dean above, say, Cooper Duff Tytler, who they were really, really hot on, because that would have been how it played out. So it's interesting. I think West Coast made a few strategical errors across the night. Jesse and I spoke about that a little bit on the channel on Saturday. So that was another interesting takeaway from the draft. But I was very surprised that Harry Dean's bid came so high. I thought that was a smokescreen for sure.
I mean, the Blues obviously came prepared for it, though, so they were able to make it work for them anyway. Duff Tytler gets the Eagles at four, which we think they're going to be pretty happy with. He's going to be a super player for them, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and they went for those two picks in Dersma and Duff Tytler. They certainly went for players that have rare athleticism, rare athletic traits, and probably have a lot of upside. I thought they could have gone another way with this, given the fact that they don't have a lot of leadership in the club, and they've got 2 years on a contract for Harley Reid, and they are going to want to try to keep him there with some performances on field. So I thought they could have gone for a bit of a reach here and even gone for a Dyson Sharp in the top two picks. But in the end, of course, when you've got a Dersma, when you've got a Duff Tytler, that level of talent sitting on the board, it is difficult. And I think if you look at their draft all over, they were able to bring in a couple of really good mids at the back end. They got Josh Lindsay, who's a ready-made player. So they'll hope that those guys can move the needle for them a little bit in the next couple of seasons. But you'd have to say a good draft for West Coast with some tactical errors late. Like I said, with the, you know, not bidding on Patterson, I think that's a really, really big mess up. And then there were the academy players and the father-son. They obviously don't get Charlie Banfield in the end. And they missed Kobe Evans as well, which was another one that they had. Yeah, and they could have opened up some list spots with these guys. you know, players like Cripps could have gone onto the rookie list and then they would have had spots for them. So they've come out, you know, post-draft and said that was all part of our big plan. We you know, essentially we just didn't really rate these guys that high, but I think, you know, just to be able to bring those guys into the club and have a look at them would have been handy for the West Coast.
It's, yeah, it kind of felt like on night two, it got to the stage where it felt like other clubs were bullying West Coast by bidding on their players. Just sort of, they were pretty much snookered at one point. They couldn't do anything about it.
I think clubs sensed that they'd messed up a little bit with their, just their overall. It felt to me like they'd been distracted by what was going on with the Gold Coast thing. I don't think they realised that Gold Coast were going to match that second bid on Bo Adansil. They didn't think that they'd got the points together. They had in the background. They got distracted with that, and then other clubs kind of pounced on their players in the, you know, 30s and 40s and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly right. It's quite remarkable because there were quite a few mocks that actually didn't, yeah, had the Adansil bid not being matched. That was interesting. Then we came in and chucked a few bids on, as we were always going to, which was good to see. Unfortunately, we didn't land any of them, but that's okay. Make the teams pay. And then we've gone with Sam coming with pick 7. What did you make of our pick 7? I've been really, really all over Sam coming for a while. I feel like he could be one of the better ones of the crop. I think he's going to be a really good player for us. Potential leadership down the track as well.
Yeah, I've been really hot on Sam Cumming across the entire season. I think he's one, when you've had a few bolters in this draft at the top end, he's been one that's just been consistently really good for the entire season. He's got that just tenacious ball-winning ability, just relentless ball-winning ability inside the center circle at stoppages and stuff like that. I think across the season, he probably something that he has had to work on is parts of his outside game. Although he's good on the eye when he flies for marks and gets possessions on the outside, I think his real strength has been that contested possession work. And if you look at his breakdown of his numbers, it's pretty high in that contested clearance sort of work. And he probably just, it's more of a where he runs more than his actual athleticism overall, which has probably hampered him there a little bit. But I think Richmond see him as a project and someone that they can, you know, coach. He's a bit of a younger player as well amongst the crop contextually. So that's something to note as well. And I just think overall, with Sam coming, if you look at your other midfielders that you've drafted, like you go back to last year, you got Smiley, you got Lawler, who are both bigger bodied midfielders, ones that can play sort of mid forward. They both kick the ball really, really well, those two mids. So they're going to bring that ball use and control for you a little bit, as well as their sort of explosive traits on the inside. Sam coming just sort of brings that. Although he brings speed, he brings that kind of relentless ball winning. He's not necessarily, you know, the best kick in the crop, but I don't think you need that with the other two players that you drafted. So you've really gone here for, I mean, if you look at the draft overall, we'll go through the other players, but there is a real emphasis on speed here, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there absolutely is. It does seem to complement the other players that we did take last year. I think Sam Cumming is going to fit in quite nicely, and I do like the concept of him in a 1-2 rotation with Lawler on half forward and midfield, both pretty good marks overhead, both got good goal sense as well. And it was interesting that Sam was saying that he's always seen himself as a midfielder and the forward craft stuff's kind of happened a little bit later on. So he's still maybe a bit newer to that side of things as well. So there's plenty of scope for improvement there. But yeah, he's going to be a super player. So I really liked that pick. I thought it was a good one.
I see him as a little bit of a, with his midfield work, I see him as a comparison to like a George Wardlaw and a Matt Rowe, just the way that he hunts the football. He just makes it his own, bullet a gate, and it's very crash and bash, but he just makes sure that he gets the footy. And then he's probably got, compared to Rowe and Wardlaw, he's probably got some extra traits that actually help him out when he does go forward. Like he's got that marking ability, which makes him a real aerial threat as well.
Yeah, he's not pigeonholed at just the midfield. Now, it does seem like a no-nonsense player. Just, it's my ball. I'm going to go get it now. And then he'll just go do what he wants with it. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he goes. And then with our pick 8, we went Sam Grill. Now, this one, I think, and look, there's a few shocked reactions, I think, across a lot of Richmond supporters. And I think that's because a lot of us, rightly or wrongly, get swept up in the very late mock drafts by Yakel Toomey, who everyone obviously respects. And based on his history, I mean, I thought we were going to take Xavier Taylor personally, but when you step back and see the pick for what it is, it's a bloody good selection. And almost straight away, the reference point was that you had him at number 4 or 5 in your power ranking. So I knew that you were really, really all into Grill. And when you look at his running profile, the speed, the endurance, breaks lines. Again, almost similar to coming in, a bit of a no-nonsense football. He'll see ball, get ball. And what I love is that he's got a hard edge as well. Like, he's not just a fleet-footed outside play. He's happy to put his head over the ball, smash into bodies, cop the physical contact. And I think he's going to be a seriously fun player to watch.
Absolutely. And he's quite small and skinny right now. And I think that's where he gets kind of pigeonholed as this outside player at the moment. But as you said, from the first time I watched him, he has a hard edge to him. He loves a tackle and he loves to go in for the ball in for a big contest. But I suppose where he shines is that speed and movement. You saw him across the season for the Oakley Chargers, the way that he can pick up the ball really, really deep and get into those multiple handball chains through the middle of the ground, just take the game on, step around guys, open up the field and then hit targets inside forward 50. He doesn't even, people have talked about his kicking being a bit of a negative, but he doesn't even really need to be that good of a kick when he can open up space like that with his speed and with his movement. So I think that's something he can work on, but I also don't think he's a bad kick or anything like that. And he's got a lot of penetration as well. Yeah. So again, if you're looking at the different types of players that Richmond have drafted here, they needed that fast-footed guy. I think an option for them, you know, last year that they were looking at was like a Jagger Smith if they were going to trade up for that kind of pick. But in a way, you've probably got a more rounded athletic profile here in Sam Grill. Yes, he's not going to help you as much as a Jagger Smith at stoppage at the moment, but he's certainly got upside to have more power and penetration coming out of stoppage, similar to a Zach Butters in the future. So I think you've got an absolutely awesome one here. And when you get a combination of an athlete like this, when they can run a 2K time trial in sub six, they can run a 20-meter sprint in 2.91 seconds is ridiculous speed. That's a hybrid athlete. And then you take in that hard edge and the football ability that he has. It's an amazing player. And I can't see why those other clubs, the only real justification is that there were more sort of ready-made midfielders around the mark of the Essendons and the Melbournes who apparently weren't interested in him. But I've got a feeling that one of those teams still would have snapped him up if he was there.
And even though he's not going to be ready for maybe the in and under contested stuff straight away, just from a size perspective, I think, again, to your point earlier, that the other players we've drafted around him kind of offsets it. We don't actually need him to do that straight away. We can actually utilize his pace, whether it is off halfback, whether it is off a wing, which you do have a bit of a vacancy for. Every time I watch him run, I keep sort of thinking of Max Holmes running capacity vibes, but the Zach Butter harder edge. And I know that's a very lofty expectation, but if he can somehow find a mix between the two, I think we'll be doing okay.
I think you've nailed it. And I think that's a good thing to mention just with that running ability. I think that's his flaw, that he would be a half-back player that just, you know, tears off the back of stoppage and gets involved and kicks the ball inside 50. Like, that's the worst-case scenario for me.
And in reality, I mean, the half, it's not even that bad, is it? Because the half-back is a pretty pivotal spot these days. I mean, we've obviously seen the run and drive that we had from Dan Rioli for so many years that we now maybe felt like we missed a little bit. We've got Sam Banks back, but all those top four teams, top eight teams, you've got two key pivotal running halfbacks. So if that's the worst case scenario, it's still going to be a bit of a win, I reckon. But I can definitely see him playing some inner roles in the future. So I'm thrilled that they're both on board. We've just gone for the Sam double. The Bombers then jumped in next and they snapped up Sullivan Roby and Jacob Farrow. So Farrow was one that I know we spoke about previously as being one that we thought could go a bit higher than what a lot of mocks suggested. A few mocks we all saw had him at kind of that 13 to 15 range, and he has gone high. I think those two are pretty good picks for the Bombers.
Yeah, so I think Farrow was an interesting one. I think partly sometimes too with a player that's from WA, when there's a lot of players in a bunch that are similar, you expect the Victorian team probably not to go for the WA guy. But I think Essendon got a good mix of players. If we throw Sharp into that as well, they get Roby, who's that sort of bolter, forward mid type with explosiveness. They get Farrow, who can kick the footy, but is still a bigger bodied inside mid. And then they get Dyson Sharp, who's that just bankable commodity and first possession type player. So I think with the three of those guys, they get a decent balance. I was a little bit surprised that they didn't maybe offset the mids a little bit and go for example, Xavier Taylor, even have a bit of a pop at a Dobbiston who ends up going to North a little bit later, just to give them some positional flexibility there. They kind of are pretty, I guess, wedded to the inside mids in this draft. But I guess they also, you know, if one of these guys falls through the cracks and doesn't do as well. They sort of offset that a little bit by getting three of them together. But certainly a midfield revolution taking place in the next couple of years at Essendon.
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing the clubs are trying to bank on and predict where the game's going to go. I guess we did that to an extent last year with some of the players that we drafted. And I suppose now that this year was Essendon's turn. The D's went Xavier Taylor, which is a really good pick. And then probably what seemed like one of the more surprising picks, probably with more so with how high Latrell Pickett went. I don't think anyone really saw it coming. It sounded like that he was sort of snuck in the back door of Marvel Stadium as part of the first round cohort there to get caught up onto the stage. But what did you make of those two picks for the D's?
I mean, Xavier Taylor's just an imperious defender. I thought he was the best defender in the crop. And I think he has, he's got it in him to be able to play different positions as well with his athletic profile and his competitiveness and stuff like that. So big tick there. The Latrell Pickett pick is difficult for me. I haven't seen a lot of him. I mean, I don't make a habit of watching a ton of SANFL reserves football. So I've seen the highlights like everybody else, but sometimes when you're playing football at that level, I don't really know what to do with that, if you know what I mean. Like, how do you compare that to, say, Coates Talent League or National Champs or whatever? And he's also a couple of years older, so it's sort of difficult to put everything together there. But I do like teams just in general that have a bit of a philosophy and they go after guys that they want in a more sort of broader kind of thematic view. So I think Melbourne, with their recruiting over 3, 4, 5 years, they have done pretty well. So I think you can trust that they know the player. And they are, again, they're going through this kind of revolution at the moment where they're bringing in different types of players. So I trust them on it, but I can't really give you a significant answer on how good Latrell Pickett is because I just don't know.
Yeah, I think it caught a lot of people off guard. But it's a good story for them nonetheless with the way it's all panned out. And no doubt he'll be a very good player. You would think if the family bloodline's anything to go by. We've done Dyson Sharp. Sydney, Harry Kyle, that one probably felt a little bit higher than what we all saw a little bit too, wasn't it? He was kind of floating around that 17 to 25 area. But yeah, obviously came in a bit sooner than what we all thought.
Yeah, he's another tricky one to judge because he's that rugby convert. He actually hasn't played a lot of Aussie rules football. So
yeah,
he probably doesn't have the performances of some players, but recruiters do love that. They love a cross-code convert, those sorts of players. A player that's grown up playing a different sport, they see a lot of potential and upside in a player like that. And then you throw in the fact that the Giants actually traded up to make this bid, didn't they, on the night? So crosstown rivals there kind of going at each other as a little bit of a jibe. So I think they knew that Sydney were going to match this bid. But Harry Kyle, he does have a lot of upside in him. I mean, he's a Finn Callahan type player, a big-bodied mid that can run, carry the ball and kick the ball really well. So I always find with those rugby converts, they tend to like to be behind the ball a little bit more than in the, you know, major congestion of a stoppage. They like being able to see everything kind of unfold in front of them that a halfback can. So I think the challenge for Kyle will be, like, can he make that step into the midfield? But, he's got a lot of time to be able to prove that. I wouldn't suggest that he's going to step right in straight into the team or anything like that. They've got a strong midfield. So he'll have 3, 4 years to be able to develop.
And Oscar Taylor to the Giants, probably about the area we thought he might go, but that's going to be a really good pick for them based on his athletic profile. He actually fits them really, really well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's that tsunami football, right? He just gets involved in that. He's got the elite pace. He's got the agility. He can use that. I mean, he's a little bit of a similar type to what they took last year. They took Harry Oliver from the Sandringham Dragons, who was that, you know, halfback distributor type, but just doesn't have the elite speed of an Oscar Taylor. So they love that. They really target speed and have done for several drafts. So in a way, you could probably say Richmond, probably with their draft overall, mirrored a bit what the Giants have been doing with their speed players like Darcy Jones and these kind of guys. They love it. And Ollie Hannaford last year as well.
And then we'll round out just the early first round chat with Lachie Doveston, your team, North Melbourne, jumped in and took him. How did you feel about that? And you wrapped to get Lachie on board?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I've been crying out for years that we need to get some quality small forwards and some key position players. So I thought North Melbourne's draft was brilliant overall, to be honest. I still think, like, contextually with the fact that we traded away our future first, I think they've lucked into this draft a bit, but getting Doveston and then Threadgold, the first pick of the second night, I think that was pretty fortunate. that he was still available and two really quality players. And Dobbiston, you know, given the performances that he's had this season and the amount of goals that he's kicked, I think he is someone that can come in and play straight away for North and really have an impact early.
I think so too. I think he'll work well at the feet of Larky. Obviously, different player type to Zerha and probably, I'm guessing he's shorter than Curtis as well. So can no doubt slot in and run a mark. And the best thing is he won't even get the best defender or the best small defender because they're going to go to someone like a Curtis. So he will he'll have a field day, no doubt. Scrolling through, so the next pick that we had at pick 31, I don't know if you jumped onto Rookie Me at about the time that Zane Pike's name was read out, but it literally crashed. And my only assumption is because the Richmond people around the country were trying to work out who Zane Piker was because none of us had really heard of him before. But by all reports and looking at the recruiters' footage of like the videos they post from draft night, the South Australian cohort and I think Ry Geeshan were absolutely pumped to get Zane Piker into the team. And I was interested to sort of see that they'd spoken to him quite a few times. Uze's met him a few times. So they'd obviously done quite a bit of work. But the more I see of him, the more I actually really like the pick. He's explosive. He's got forward craft. He's not really a pigeonholed forward pocket. He'll move up the ground and get some disposals. What do you make of the Zane Piker pick?
So if anyone's actually watched my content on my channel at all, they'll know that I absolutely love Zane Piker. So I think this is an absolute smash pick. I was surprised that he went that early. I spoke the first time I watched this guy play, I absolutely loved him. And I was messaging recruiters about him and stuff like that. And they all wanted to talk him down. They all wanted to say what he couldn't do. And I think in retrospect, there's a few players like that, particularly if they're relatively unknown players, you bring them up to recruiters, they don't want to say or sound too excited about them because if they happen to be a bit of a secret, they don't want that sort of, you know, getting into the media and that sort of thing. So they'll sort of play it down a little bit. And I think that's the case with Zane Piker because he's an elite small forward. He's probably with ball in hand with his finishing and stuff like that. If you were to separate him from a Dobbiston or a Nick Watson type in his year, he's probably a little bit more raw and misses some opportunities and stuff like that. But just the work rate factor and the speed factor and how involved he gets in the game, facilitates for teammates and sets up other goals. Guys, he's the perfect sort of worker bee small forward, I think, that can just get up and influence. So it's a great pick by Richmond. And I sometimes feel over the last 2 years watching Richmond draft, I feel like I'm so aligned to the way that they do it because they've just gone so thematically with that pace this year. Piker, Grill, they've got Cumming as well. And then their last pick, who I'm sure we'll talk about as well, Noah Roberts-Thompson, another one with speed and agility coming through in spades. So great picks. And big fan of Piker. He's going to do good things.
Can you see him playing midfield in the future? Or do you think he's going to be more that sort of half forward link up sort of player? I mean, it's hard to gauge because he's so young. So he's still got quite a bit of growing to do. But I don't know if you saw photos today at the club, but he's got some big legs. His legs are almost bigger than Tom Lynch's. Like the power that he must be able to drive through his legs is insane.
He's also good overhead. So he's got that sort of, I reckon his standing vert would be pretty good as well. Just the power that he can generate. Can he play midfield? I mean, he's a little bit small to play.
And the tank's an issue as well. I think the endurance is probably the big question mark too.
Yeah, but his elite pace, like he's a sub 2.9 second 20 meter sprint. Like that's a good starting point to be able to work on the endurance later. It's much easier to train that than it is to try to get faster. I think he can. I think more likely if you're going to see Zane Piker in a midfield role at AFL level, it would be pinch hitting, like we've seen from someone like a Nick Watson just goes in. Tom Papley's another one, Cozzy Pickett, that type, where it's just as a bit of an impact player because he does rotation and you know, just to sometimes throw someone a little bit kamikaze that has pace and explosiveness in there. I think he's got, you know, he's got pretty good technical skills and stuff that he can work a stoppage, but yeah, you don't typically see players that size, you know, play midfield consistently, I suppose.
Yeah, not fully fledged. Yeah, no. All he would need to be is just that role play through the midfield and then other than that, around the ground. But the other reason why I thought the pick was interesting, it feels like that maybe mid to longer term, it might mean that someone for us like a Seth Campbell might be deployed further up the grounds because we've sort of already got a few other smalls and when you see Uze, I know it's all jovial in the moment, but when you see Uze on the phone to him saying, oh, maybe round one, like coaches don't often say that. Like it was just a really interesting interaction. So there's a long way between now and round one, but
I genuinely think he could. I think it's a position of need for you guys too, right? Like that you guys were in for Rosas Jr. I think in the off season. So you are trying to bring those guys with speed in the forward half of the ground. And I think you're right about Campbell too. Like you get him a little bit higher up the ground and guys like Piker as well. And then they just run everyone back to goal, just create a lot of space and work together. And I think Zane Piker, he was such a team player in that South Australian team. And I think that's another thing that Richmond would have seen in him to come in and play a role and facilitate for others as well.
Birdman, thanks for the $2. Wants your bad intel on Sam Cumming, Dylan. What is there such a thing as bad intel on Sam Cumming?
It's nothing too specific, but I talked to some recruiters through the year that, again, similar to what I said about Zane Piker, were pretty keen to talk down his, because the one thing that recruiters have on you objectively is GPS data, right? They just were very keen to talk down his running capacity, both from a endurance perspective and, running to the right spots to pick up uncontested possessions. I heard that quite a lot from Sam Cumming. And I think when you look at his combine, how well he did in the 2K time trial, I think it was probably a little bit of shade. So that was my bad intel. Nothing more specific than that. But just recruiters playing games.
Which they all love to do. Because interestingly, Rai Geeshan on the flip side was sort of raving about how they use the GPS data to make the selections. So it's, I suppose, a tale of, just depends on how you want to frame it, I guess, with if they're trying to hide him and try and get him to slip down another couple of spots in the draft order.
Yeah, it's difficult to know. I suppose, like, it's not telling someone that has a media presence that someone is a worse runner. It's not really going to do much for you, I wouldn't have thought, but I suppose they look for small gains anywhere they can get them.
Grok's got one. Have you got any thoughts on the Piker / Jamie Elliott comparison?
Yeah, it's a pretty good one. That sort of little hybrid-y type player with speed and power that's clinical around goal. I think Piker does have to work, as I said before, probably has to work on that finishing just a little bit and kicking more goals overall. But it's a pretty good one. I think Piker's probably got a little bit better endurance as well. He can sort of get up the ground a little bit more. And as you said, there is that potential midfield perspective. He did, like, Piker did play a lot of midfield for Woodville this season as well.
Yeah.
A lot of games where he'd have 30 touches and stuff like that. But I think at the top level, he'd be more suited to a small forward. And I like that comparison.
Then rounding out, talking about just the Richmond specific picks, we traded back in. I found this really interesting. So we had pick 61. And then we actually traded back in to get pick 54 to get Noah Roberts-Thompson. So my only assumption is that we felt he was going to be taken off the board in the short space of time that it was going to be our pick 61. But another South Australian player, which is really interesting, we've definitely gone for the South Australian flavour. What have your thoughts been on Noah Roberts-Thompson for 2025?
I was really impressed with him at the national champs. It's hard to find a bad player in that South Australian squad in the national champs. They did so well. They were just really, really connected and they played a really good team game. And I thought he was one of the sort of deep runners through the midfield. So he wasn't, he wasn't a star or anything like that. But I was really impressed with his technical ability. Like when he won the ball at stoppage, he could get it out on both sides of his body. And when he was in space, he can kick the ball really nicely as well. So again, position at the next level for Richmond, like what does he play? I think he probably occupies a half forward type role, half forward / midfield depth type role, but his kicking is a real standout, both sides of the body. And when I saw him at the combine, it stood out to me how good his speed and endurance were as well. So again, Richmond certainly targeted those sorts of players and Roberts-Thompson, good technically as well. So you don't always get that. Sometimes you get the athleticism and you don't get the skills. He's got both of those.
I like that he's a left-footer too. I know that seems very subtle, but in our side, it does feel like a point of difference. We don't have a whole heap of left-footers these days, so I didn't mind that as well. But it was interesting the way we drafted. It did very much have speed written all over it, and it seems to go a little bit hand-in-hand with Uze's mantra to the playing group early in the preseason was just like bull at a gate, play 100 mile an hour. So hopefully we're going to see some speed on the ball in 2026 for Richmond because we did not see it a great deal last year.
The Tigers certainly aren't going to get themselves into a situation, the way that they're drafting, they're not going to get themselves into a situation where the team doesn't have balance. They're certainly prioritising balance. Yeah. You can see it across both of these drafts.
George's got a question for you. What defender would you compare Blake Threadgold to?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Because aesthetically, when I see him play, I think Wietering. And I see the Harris Andrew one that you've mentioned there, but he's a bit more athletic than those guys as well. And he can run off his man in a somewhat similar way to someone like a Josh Weddle. I'm not saying he's a Josh Weddle. He's a bit taller and a bit more of a key defender than those guys. And he's not as good on the ball as a Josh Weddle, but something between that. Yeah. Like a more athletic version of, this sounds insane when you say stuff like this, a more athletic version of Jacob Wietering or Harris Andrews.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I mean, it's going to be a good pickup for you. And like you said, to get him at the start of the second round, that's a pretty good get. Well,
yeah, he's got that, Blake Threadgold too, he's got that defensive gene. He just, you know, hates to lose to his opponent.
Yeah.
Yeah, human blanket, they call him.
I'll talk about some of the other sliders that came through late in the draft. One that really caught a lot of us by surprise, I'm not sure if it did you as well, Archie Ludwig, pick 50 to Adelaide, felt like that was really, really down the order compared to what everyone was kind of flagging for him. I feel like it's a really good steal for them.
Yeah, it's a good pick. I feel Archie's always had some deficiencies in his game across the season that he's had to work on. I think... he's not the most clean marking player, which is a bit of a problem as a key position forward, clearly. He double takes the ball quite a lot. And he sets shot kicking for goal isn't always the best as well. So I think there is probably two main deficiencies. And then you throw the injury into that as well. He gets injured in the champs, doesn't play at all for the back end of the season. So I'm not surprised that he slid. And then some other key position players sort of emerged as the season went on as well. So I just think he kind of was a bit out of sight, out of mind in a way. And with those deficiencies, I think teams probably didn't see that they were giving up like a top 10 or a top 20 type prospect or anything like that. At the same time that I'm saying all of that, he's an athletic key position forward that's, you know, played in the Sandringham Dragons system, gets up the ground, gets involved, and I think his aerial competitiveness is really, really good. He just needs to work on some of the, you know, technical points of marking and those sorts of things, and his positioning and a few things like that. So great pick for the Crows. I wasn't as surprised, though. I would have expected probably if you had to ask me on the draft night, I would have said 35 to 45.
Yeah, okay. So about where you might have had him then. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Paul wants to... We did touch on Noah Hibbins-Hargraves at the start, and I think Dill had mentioned this one was probably the biggest surprise, I think, to a lot of people as to him not getting drafted and then not rookie drafted, probably more surprisingly. If you had to take a stab in the dark as to why it might have been, because we know consistency was a little bit of an issue for him during the year, but we also know that he probably put in one of the best single performances of almost maybe the draft class with that 29-5. So he can play.
Yeah. It's Noah Hibbins-Hargraves is going to be a fascinating one. I think a couple of things that we can sort of talk about are there's the performance piece, there's the inconsistency piece, there's the transition running piece. I think that's in there as well. Like, can he actually transition well enough? He's got a good little bit of pace, but he's not the best runner overall. And then you put that with his position as well. Like, what actually is Noah Hibbins-Hargraves' position? And I talk to recruiters about this a bit, where you'll talk about a player and there's an ambiguity around where they're actually going to play at the next level. So is he a winger? Is he going to be a mid in the future? Is he this kind of hybrid-y medium forward type? I'm not 100% sure. The one that it reminds me of, and this player it wasn't considered as high a quality as Noah Hibbins-Hargraves, but Sam Toner, he missed the mid-season draft. And I was surprised on talent that he didn't go. And a lot of recruiters said to me around him that he plays a weird position that's almost dying in the AFL. It's sort of that Bailey Fritch type forward. It's not quite a key position player, not quite a ground level player. And they don't have elite speed and elite endurance to get up the ground as well. So they're meant to be this kind of pseudo key that plays a little bit closer to goal and deeper and kicks goals, but they're not quite a key. So they don't have the physicality and the robustness of you know, a Harry Mackay key position forward. They're a medium forward, but they do the same job because their main thing is to mark and not win ground level contests. So it's, I feel like that's where he sits a little bit positionally. So I can justify it on that for a reason that he didn't get drafted. But at the same time, I look at a player a couple of years ago that went in the top five in Harry Sheezel. And I think there's a lot of similarities between Noah Hibbins Hargraves' overall sort of technical game with a Harry Sheezel. Like this guy's a serious footballer as far as his technique goes. He can kick on both sides of his body. He uses the ball beautifully. He's a clutch player, which I thought on some level alone would have got him drafted.
I thought that too. I mean, as supporters would probably hold weight to that, but maybe it's not such a big thing in the eyes of recruiters. But it'd be interesting to see. I don't know if he's been announced yet as to if he's had a train-on position with the club. I'd be shocked if he didn't get one. Surely someone's going to have him train on.
Yeah. I mean, the only other thing to throw up there is obviously like the character piece thing, but who knows? Whether those other deficiencies as far as, you know, potentially his transition running, his work rate and his robustness. I didn't even mention then the injuries as well. Like he had a lot of difficult injuries this season, ones that aren't really like calves. He injured his calves. Like that's not a great injury to have. And he also had quite a bad concussion as well. Okay. So they're those tricky ones. I don't think you wouldn't get drafted on those things alone, but you start to build the picture up and you go, okay, there's a problem there. Yeah, there's lots of problems everywhere.
Interesting.
But the clutch factor thing, like that speaks to an elite mentality for me, particularly when the game's on the line. And I think he was a guy that always wanted to get involved when a big moment was there. So that's really interesting. I made the Sheezel comparison. I think Sheezel obviously probably is a bit better athletically, even though he's not necessarily elite, but he's a good runner at least. And Hibbins Hargraves, apparently he did do a 2K time trial at some point for recruiters and it wasn't particularly impressive. So that might've been another factor in all of this, but overall, I still thought he would have got drafted, Chris. I'm surprised.
Although, so Grock reckons he's not been listed as a train-on player at any club yet. Yeah, that one was fascinating. And even the Ollie Greaves one, I guess we all probably felt that he may slip because of some of those athletic traits with the speed in the 2K time trial. But as an actual ball winner and a performer, he was, again, a pretty solid player. But he gets his chance at Hawthorn, and I think they're going to get rewarded for that in some way, shape or form down the track.
Yeah, he's more justifiable, I think, where you can sort of see it yourself. It's very easy to understand why, even though he probably, like, I haven't seen many draftees perform that well on field, get the numbers and the goals and the output that he's had and slip to the rookie draft. So it's still one out of the box, but you can kind of understand it a little bit more.
And speaking of the train-on players, a few people are keen to get your thoughts on the two that were announced for us. Thomas Burton, firstly, was announced earlier on today. He played for Vic Metro, midfielder/defender. I think he was kind of slated to go in the 30s to 40s area. Looking at his strengths, dare, leadership, running power, speed, versatility, and work rate. Again, you see the word speed and work rate, and it seems to be the mantra of what we're going for again.
Yeah, if there was knocks on Thomas Burton, output-wise for the Western Jets, I think he averaged around 30 touches in the Coates Talent League. He played a role between halfback and midfield. So he's pretty metronomic from when he plays as a halfback player, just kind of dictates and sort of sets up the tempo. And he does have a lot of leadership back there. A lot of people I've spoken to about Thomas Burton talk about his leadership qualities as well. But I suppose he's not, I mean, sort of athletically and physiologically, he's not a modern day AFL player, is he? Like he sort of lacks a little bit of penetration, can only kick the ball a certain amount of distance, which kind of keeps you inside a bubble when you're trying to move the ball off half back. And then he's quite small and slightly built for a midfielder as well. So I think, again, why he slipped through probably comes down to positional things and stuff like that. But I think he has quite a lot to offer with his leadership. And he did test really well at the combine as well. As much as I talk about the lack of athleticism, I think he ran a 2.95 20 meter sprint or something like that. So he's got pace off the mark. And I think he's got something to offer. So I think this is a good one for Richmond. And I had heard earlier in the season that Richmond were keen on Thomas Burton, and it obviously didn't play out with the other players that they took, but he'll be a good one. Yeah, he'll be a good one to get around the club, I reckon.
And the other one that we put onto the train-on list, which came out not long ago, actually just before we jumped on, was the big ruckman, Marcus Krasnodamski. I'll probably butcher that, from Eastern Rangers ruck. Very raw, I think, to the game. 201 centimetres, good athleticism, competitive, upside. And he's an interesting one because I know there's going to be a lot of Richmond people saying, yeah, go the ruck. Because, I mean, we've got Mankervis. Look, Samson Ryan's there, but where the jury's still out and it's probably less favourable than favourable. Ollie Hayes-Brown just come off a Cat B rookie list. I think you'll get a chance, but there's sort of not a hell of a lot else going on in that space. So what do you make of Big Marcus?
He's a bit of a, I suppose his back end of the year was really, really strong for the Eastern Rangers. He was part of that premiership team. Probably looks a little bit like a B-grade Cooper Duff Tytler at this point with the athletic traits that he brings. He's a tall guy that can jump. He's got speed. He's got endurance. He's sort of got athletically got the entire package. He came from a basketball background. So I think teams will look at that and see him as a bit of a prospect, but certainly one that's you wouldn't have thought is going to impact straight away for the Tigers, but I think they're probably trying to shore up and future-proof that potential and want to have those running ruckmen. You know, we're going to see it this season with the fifth bench spot. You want to bring in guys that can ruck a little bit, can run and have that positional flexibility. So I think he's a good option for them to bring in, albeit, I mean, it's a bit of a swing, isn't it, at this point to go after a tall ruckman.
It is. And it's like, for similar reasons why I didn't think that CDT fit would be the same reasons why I'm not sure about that for a pick as well, because reality is he won't have any impact for us for at least 3 or 4 years, if at all. I don't know. I just feel like where we're at as a side, we're probably better off trading in for a ruckman when we need to. But maybe they're just worried that the backup ruck, I mean, we've got Tom Sims as well, who's probably going to be next in line to do ruck work once he's back from the foot injury. But yeah, it's, I don't know. If I was to have to pick one, I'd probably go Burton. But the one that has missed out, which I think we all thought was going to be in a train-on spot at a minimum, was Louis Callaway, who I feel absolutely gutted for. And I know there's probably a bit more of an emotional attachment, I suppose, being a father-son prospect. I still don't think he had that bad of a season. I guess the question still might be, how does he fit into an AFL list and what role does he play in an AFL side? And that may be where he come undone potentially. But yeah, I thought he might have got a crack.
Yeah, it's a tough one with Louis. I think ultimately with a player like that, on some level, your performances and your output start to not even matter that much when you're a player like that. It's probably the athletic profile. And as you said, that where you can kind of, what they can mold him into at AFL level. I think he's just probably one of those guys that doesn't, at the end of the day, he probably doesn't quite hurt you enough, and he'd have to develop sort of significant weapons for him to you know, get in and get on a senior list. But he had a really good season. His national champs were really, really strong and played consistently in the SANFL as well. So tough story, but there's a lot of tough stories out there at the moment. And particularly Absolutely. In a draft where only, you know, just over 50 players got drafted, I think, in the end. So it's a tough year.
It is. It's a very tough year. Like, obviously, McGuan as well, another one who didn't get taken, so there's a few floating around. Jeg wants to know, how do wealthy professional clubs like the Eagles miscalculate so poorly in situations you described? Surely Clark loses his job as a result. Jesse's thoughts would be key. I'd be keen to hear how he responded to your thoughts on that too.
Yeah, I mean, he sort of agreed that he thinks that they probably did fumble the situation a little bit. I think overall West Coast fans are sort of relatively happy with the entire situation just because they feel they came out of the draft really well.
Yeah.
I think even with those poor decisions or miscalculations, they still were able to get out with a really good draft hand and didn't sort of mess it up too badly. One thing I actually didn't mention in that, that pick where they bid on the two Gold Coast players, didn't get them, and then ended up with Josh Lindsay, they actually traded up for that as well, which is a bit of a red flag as well, just with understanding the miscalculation. As far as how they do it, I don't know, but it just really gives me vibes, or has given me vibes, of how North Melbourne operate in the draft over like a long period of time. Like, just seem to get out making an enormous mistake every year and not being able to. West Coast obviously is a different situation because North Melbourne's a more, you know, boutique-y small club from Melbourne and don't have the resources of West Coast. But I think when you've been bad for a long time, it takes a little bit of time to actually, I don't know, like evolve out of those situations. I think it takes a long time to actually bring in people, successful people into the club that
yeah.
can fix some of those situations. And there's always hangovers and lag to some of that stuff. So I don't know the exact answer, but it does look like they were they miscalculated and they read some of those things wrong.
It's interesting because I suppose the net outcome was still okay, but they could have done things a bit better. But yeah,
it's a little bit in a way. It's what I said before about the Whitlock trade with you guys last year in the 2024 draft. I feel like over two drafts now, that's actually worked out okay.
I think so too. I think as much as it killed me to say it even on the night, that getting back in at that pick that you did, I think was a really good outcome. And Doveston is a really good need too. So I think everyone walks away fairly even from that trade, I reckon, at the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you guys certainly still won from it, but we haven't lost as much as I thought we had at the time. But I also think
perceived loss, yeah.
But I also think that North Melbourne couldn't have foreseen that they were going to get such a good draft hand this year. So there's a little bit of walking into luck, I feel.
Yeah. You've got to make your own luck sometimes, I guess.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to get your thoughts on, and folks, if you've got any questions in chat, start flinging them through. We'll get through a couple at the end. I just want to, and I know, look, I don't know how much thought you've put into it being a Richmond-based question, but with the 12 players that we've just picked up over the last 2 years, where do you see Richmond heading in the next 3 to 4 years? Like, we've just added a whole heap of youth, almost an unprecedented amount of number. Like 12 new players in 2 years is sort of unheard of. And they'll all take, 3 or 4 years to come on. How do you think our success rate might be in the very early stages of all of this? And where do you see the club heading directional-wise over the next 3 or 4 years from an outsider's perspective?
I mean, obviously the honest answer is you never know, because you don't know how many of these players are going to be successful and whatnot and go on to be top-level AFL players. But the one thing that I see with Richmond that a lot of the other clubs down the bottom of the ladder don't have, I still think they have remnants of that sort of successful era quite recently still at the football club. So it's not like they're in a situation where they've been terrible for 15, 20 years. They've also got a lot of strong players at the club. I mean, you look back to that Taranto Hopper trade, which seemed like a bit of a disaster at the time. I think it's kind of good now to have those midfield leaders actually in the club to lead these guys and not put as much pressure on your Lawlers and your Smileys and your Hottons and yeah. these types of players. It's given Richmond a unique advantage at the draft where they've been able to go for, I think, more talented players and players with higher upside because they've got those bankables and leaders already at the club and players that can kind of hold up behind the ball. You see a lot of the time when clubs bring in a lot of young players, they just start to get absolutely smashed in game and they can't get any nourishment from the game in game at all. So I think Richmond are in a unique situation compared to the likes of North Melbourne and West Coast and a bunch of other teams down the bottom of the ladder where they've actually been able to draft really strongly and really balanced, like we said. So this year they've just been able to target speed and gone for players that they specifically wanted. And you can already see how the team is starting to look and can look in a couple of years with the names on the team sheet now. So to answer your question, I think they're pretty bloody well placed.
Fingers crossed, still a lot to play out, of course. Look, I'll summarize this question for you, Grok, because what do you think of Jonty Faul? Grok's a massive Jonty Faul fan. He claimed him real early. He's got the number 8 now, big Jonty. I really like him. I think he's going to be a fun player to watch.
I absolutely love him. So I think with my key position forwards, I don't necessarily like the most aesthetic key position forwards, and I feel like Jonty Faul fits into this a little bit. Like he's not sort of gliding through the air. Everything feels quite hard work for Jonty Faul, but he just keeps turning up. He's so competitive in the air. He never gives up. He's got a good work rate to get up and down the ground as well. So I feel like he's such a good system player, and that's what I really value in key position forwards. I just want the guys that can continuously rock up, attack the ball, and bring the smalls and those other players into the ground. And Jonty Faul does that, whether he's going for the ball in the air, but he follows up at ground level really well too. So when you compare, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a really sort of aesthetic. You know, think of someone like a Jamari Ugle-Hagan, who is a super, super talent, but I don't think he's always as conditional, let's say, as someone like a Jonty Faul, who is a bit more bash and crash and not as easy on the eye, but he just puts in.
It's another non-negotiable and there's no bullshit, just going to smash into people and hope the ball hits the ground if I don't mark it.
Yeah, I love that in a key forward.
Yeah, I do too. Not sure if you've cast any eye over the upcoming draft, but Fighting Fury wants to know if you had any thoughts on Tanner Armstrong, Jack Lees, and Archie Daffy. Obviously, the bidding program is a little bit different next year, so it could be a bit more difficult to obtain one or all three of them. But, yeah, any thoughts on those guys? Probably Tanner's probably the one that's at the top of the tree, I think, at the moment.
I've seen the most of Tanner because I watched him a little bit at Scotch earlier in the year. I don't know too much about the other two guys. And as far as putting them, like trying to rank them up against the rest of the crop, I'll steer clear of that because that's always difficult coming into a new draft year. But I think you'll certainly have those guys closer to the top end of the draft board, like a Tanner Armstrong. I think he'll be closer to the top end than, say, Kellaway that you had this year, let's say. But, yeah, still a lot more to play out there. And the bidding system, the new point system will make that a lot more difficult. But, you know, you've also got – it's going to be another compromised draft again. You've got Cody Walker up the top there, Dougie Cochran, these kind of players. So it's going to be really interesting again. And Gold Coast are no doubt going to have some players that pop up as well.
This is a good one from Birdman. So I've got an interview coming up with Rye Geeshan, hopefully tomorrow it's meant to be. If you were having a chat to Rye, what question would you like to ask him?
Oh, I feel like I'd want to ask him something about Sam Grill. What could I ask him about Sam Grill? I'd love to know the thought process around those picks and where Sullivan Roby kind of fit in. I'd love to know just how they went through that process. Was it a genuine draft order board that they picked off with Going Cumming and Sam Grill? Or were they really just valuing those traits that they were after and maybe the personality types and those sorts of things? Like how close was that to being a Xavier Taylor or a Sullivan Roby and how the decision-making was to sort of put all that together, I think would be really, really interesting. I was going to ask you actually with Xavier Taylor, were Richmond fans disappointed just given the fact that of how big a Richmond fan he was?
I think that definitely plays a part. That definitely adds appeal to getting someone who follows the team. I guess from a supporter's mindset, you feel like if the player barracks for your club, they're less likely to want to leave at some point as well, which isn't necessarily the case whatsoever, but it's just a perception, I guess, that's there. So there's definitely a nice appeal to Xavier on the Richmond front. But I actually think, truth be told, I actually think there was more people in maybe the against Xavier Taylor camp because they weren't sure how he fit into our structural needs just with the defenders we've already got. But I could see the rationale behind it if we did do it from a future-proofing perspective for maybe 2 or 3 years down the track. But I also didn't see him as a defender either. I thought he could have played a wing for us. But, yeah, he was one who I thought we were going to take with our second pick. But ultimately, I think we picked the two correct players for where we are and what we need. And I think it's going to turn out okay, hopefully.
Yeah.
There's no guarantees, but it's – what I'm keen to find out from Rye is, like, what's one of the big misconceptions that supporters have of draft boards that a club has versus what we do and what we look at? Like, there's so many other metrics and things that go into it that I'm hoping to dig a bit deeper into.
I know a question I get a lot, and it is an interesting question, but understanding how much the 2024 draft, how much the 2025 draft played into the Richmond's draft board in 2024. So when they were selecting the likes of Lawler and Smiley and Armstrong and Houghton and Fall, how much were they thinking about Grill and Cumming or Dyson Sharp or whoever
it was? I've got that exact question written down. I've got written down in the 2024 draft, did you already know or have a feeling that Cumming or players like Cumming were going to be at around our pick? And then when we got the pick from you, how did that then change things again? Because it's like surely they had one eye on, like, as much as you put the official line out that, you know, we're playing well, whatever, they would have known that we were a bottom four team. Realistically, that's where we were going to finish. It was going to take a minor miracle for that to not be the case. So,
and they'd be running simulations and stuff throughout the season and saying, where do you think we'll finish based on our list and et cetera, et cetera.
And if they were being real, they knew that was going to be a top 3 or 4 pick of our own. And then the guessing game was on you guys, I guess, for your pick. So, yeah, I do want to know how much of what we picked in 2024 was because we knew what we were probably going to get in 2025, because it sounded like that they've been tracking Grill for quite a while and Sam Cumming as well. So, we'll be interested to see what they've done there.
I don't want to turn the interviewer here, but I also actually did want to ask you about the players that you couldn't get. Obviously, you finished second last. So in reality, you should have had access to the second overall pick in the draft, but you end up, I think, seven, your first pick actually came in. Yeah. Was there anyone above that that you would have really liked to get and you think you missed out on?
If we were able to have a free hit, I think the ideal player for us would have been Dylan Patterson, which is why I'm assuming we bid on him. Just that explosiveness and speed would have, it would have fit us perfectly. And that's kind of why we've gone for the players we went for, but Dylan probably has it in a greater capacity and just a lot more damaging. So, no, Gold Coast half their luck to get access. That's why I think I did a couple of videos of trying to work out a way to... Can Gold Coast just not be able to match this bid? But they always had contingencies. It was always just shuffling.
They're absolute geniuses at throwing picks around as well. Like even right before the night, I was doing like mocks and I'm like, they're not going to be able to get it. Like I was like, Ewan and Patterson are the maximum they're going to be able to get. And they ended up getting everyone.
Yeah.
They took phenomenal. Six players. They took Avery Thomas as an open pool player as well in the 20s.
And he's got great athletic traits as well. He tested really well at the combine.
Yep.
It's like, and then they've gotten Petrarca and Jamara as well. It's like, how does
and
this happen?
Two top 10 picks again.
Crazy, crazy. Grok loved your reaction to Sam Grill on Dan Does Footy podcast. Were you planning to get hyped for Grill or was that a natural reaction?
That's a good question. I think I was always, I didn't think, by the time the night came around, as I said, I didn't think Richmond were going to take him just because of the news outlets that were so strong on him going to other clubs in the end and Richmond, who they were going to take. So I didn't plan it, but if he was going to have been like a buzz pick for, say if he came at Richmond or Essendon, I think I probably naturally would have reacted like that just because I was a big fan. I think the fact that he got paired with Sam Cumming, I just thought that was awesome as well. Just the mix of player, that excites me.
What was interesting as well is it sounds like that we didn't make contact again with him since the combine. So I'm not sure how many weeks that was, but I suppose it's a tactic of sorts, I guess, to have no communication. So there's no inkling of word coming out from his camp and his manager, I guess. But yes, even he was in the dark about it too, which is probably good. It's nice for him to have a good surprise as well. And you could see how emotional he was on the night too.
I thought he had the best reaction of the night.
It's good to see. It's good to see.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it.
What do you think, just quickly before we finish up, what do you think of draft night in totality, the way it's run, all the interviews, the time it takes? How do you feel about the way it's run in its current state?
I would like to see more players actually be allowed to come and make more of an event of it. Like I didn't like this year that I think in the end it was only 14 players got an invite, maybe plus Latrell Pickett, who was sort of a late get up to it. I don't think we should be as worried about players not being selected if they get invited to the night one of the draft and stuff like that. I almost think they probably should open up to the point where they're almost letting, 50 to 100 guys in. Maybe doing it. I know this. People will probably argue that this is a little bit American style, but you're there at Marvel. Like maybe they do it actually like on the turf at Marvel, set up a bit of a stage and that sort of thing. And everyone can kind of be there. I think it's a bit sort of, I guess it's kind of intimate and they like to have the families there and the big sort of posse, they usually bring 10 or 12 people to the night, but yeah, I'd like to see more guys there and just sort of elevate the whole night. I think fans, there's an appetite for it now with fans. Everybody loves it. And we saw through, some of the channels and stuff like numbers that were tuning in to watch it. So I think just the classic, what Fox are doing, which you get a few guys on there and I feel sometimes they don't, cover it the best. They don't know all the players and stuff like that even. So there's an appetite to know more about it and we probably need to get with the times.
Do you reckon there, on our live in particular, I'm not sure if people are having the same commentary on yours. A lot of people were saying that on the second night of the draft, maybe they should consider having the timer down to 3 minutes instead of five. Is there any value in scaling it down as we get on just because of the time it takes?
It's not something I ever thought about. Maybe because we were doing a live stream, it didn't feel as long, but maybe it is more of a frustration when you're sitting at home watching as well.
Maybe
speed it up a little bit, keep it going. They like to have that so they can, bring in ads and stuff like that, don't they? They have a bit longer and make a full night of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do, like overall, I find the night pretty fun. And obviously, I mean, clearly for me, someone that knows all the players and has followed it all year, it's a bit of a, you know, end of the year sort of thing for me, I suppose. So I'm going to like it more than other people, but yeah, I think it's your grand final
in a lot of ways, isn't it? You've done it is all the work, all the study, and then that's the end result.
Yeah, you sort of know after the draft that you're going to be able to have a little bit of a break and some time off as well. So it's kind of arms up in the air, it's over, that sort of thing. But I think it's a cool night. It's a cool night, and it's the future of your club. So, you know, fans are keen on it.
No, exactly right. Well, Dill, I appreciate you jumping on tonight because I know you do want to throw your arms up and rest. Then you get a stray inbox message from me asking to come on for a chat when you're trying to get away from the draft.
It's good to unpack it, particularly with a Richmond fan. And I did want to I was going to do a video on my channel, and then I'm like, when you message me, I'm like, I'll jump on TigerCast and do it on there because I wanted to talk about your draft haul. Obviously, Sam Cumming, two players that I absolutely loved, and the fact that you got Piker in there as well. What a trifecta that was.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how all those boys pan out. So it's good they get your tick of approval as well, because just with all the work you do, everyone was keen to hear your thoughts on it. So, Dill, appreciate you jumping on, mate. Enjoy your time off. Put the feed up. Go on a holiday. Do whatever you got to do. It's your draft content was sensational. Between yourself as an individual, then the stuff you're doing with Jesse as well on True Footy, some of those streams were epic. There's 3 or 4 hour long ones on a Saturday. Thorough, detailed, fun. It was unbelievable, mate. You absolutely killed it again.
I appreciate that, mate. Love your work too.
No worries. And guys, hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you get around Dill's channel on YouTube if you haven't already. And I'm sure we'll do it all again draft time next year as well. Cool.